second, India have won the Test match. India have won the series.
They're going to get back for two. India at home. Lords goes wild.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the 81 All Out podcast. I'm Siddhartha Vaidyanathan, at SidV on Twitter. And I'm joined today by an 81 All Out regular, the cricket couch, Subhash Jayaraman. Hi, Subhash.
What's up, Sid? How you doing?
Good. And we're also delighted to be joined by a passionate cricket fan and number one Gundappa Vishwanath fan, Sriram Dhanan. Hi, Sriram.
Hi, Siddhartha. And hey, Subhash. How are you, man?
I'm all right, Sri.
Sriram has written for various outlets like ESPN Cricket Info and other publications, and great to have him here. So today we're going to talk about India's opening game of the World Cup. I mean, the opening game that came after all the other opening games were over. And India took on South Africa today at Southampton. South Africa chose to bat, could manage only 227. And India then went on to win pretty comfortably, I would say, after a few jitters early on, if one were to call those jitters. And Rohit Sharma made 100, and there were some fine bowling performances throughout. So let's get started, Subhash. What do you make of the game? And if you want to start off, we can start right at the beginning with the toss, with South Africa choosing to bat first.
I think South Africa's hand was forced with Steyn not available and Ngidi getting hurt. Their hands was forced, and so which means they had to pick an extra spinner. So if they have two spinners, it's better to bowl later in the day so that you get at least some assistance from the pitch. And you know, since you, Chris Morris is going to be your second seamer following Rabada and Philip Boyo, so you needed some assistance. So their hands were forced; they had to bowl first. And also the fact that the other two games they lost, you know, they batted second. So there are two reasons. One major reason is that their bowling, fast bowling resources were depleted, that they had to take any whatever advantage they could get. So
and yeah, that's interesting because they've won three tosses in a row now. And you would think that a team winning three tosses in a row would not lose three matches in a row, but that's what's happened. In fact, I don't think South Africa have had a poorer start to a World Cup, and they haven't, I just read that they haven't lost three matches in a row in the World Cup ever. So, you know, it's in a way, as happy as I am to see India winning so comfortably, in a way, it's also been disappointing to see South Africa play the way they have. I mean, that David Miller catch was, the drop was, you know, the final kind of nail. So
I mean sure, he dropped Rohit Sharma, but Rohit was already on 115 and the target was like less than 20 by that time, or 25, whatever. So you know, the our horse has bolted already.
Sure, but I'm just saying overall, just the, in terms of the performance, I've over the three games, it's been quite insipid, right?
Yes, of course. It looks, I mean, even though they are ranked number three in the world, the collection of players they have, and becoming number three, you know, because it's the ranking comes over many months, I guess, one year rolling ranking. You know, they're missing a major batsman, major bowler, another major piece, and Amla is on the downward slide in his career. So it kind of reflects that they will no longer be a number third ranked team, and they'll be like six, seven in the table, and that's how they played these games. I'll be surprised if they probably get like two wins in this tournament, two, and if they're lucky, they'll get a third win. You know, I expect them to beat Afghanistan and Sri Lanka, and that's about it.
Given how they played against the Indian spinners, I won't even be sure about Afghanistan and Sri Lanka, I'm sure.
Oh, God, terrible, terrible. I mean, they needed to see off Bumrah. That's all they had to do. They had to see off Bumrah so that Quinton de Kock stays for a longer time and Amla gets to play against the spinners. Instead, both of them got out. One sheer brilliance of Bumrah, another one Quinton de Kock chasing, really. Shouldn't have played at the ball. But, you know, you don't have much of a chance against Bumrah as it is. But, you know, once the middle order was exposed to these two wrist spinners, it was pretty much game up. Whenever they got any kind of partnership on, Chahal got drift, Kuldeep Yadav got dip and got their wickets. That was that. That's all she wrote. Once you got 227, sure, you know, as you mentioned up top about the jitters for India, from a fan point of view, you know, because you recognize that it's a long tail, basically 8, 9, 10, 11 don't amount to much. So that means most of your work has to be done by the top three, which has been the case. You know, there have been 52% of the runs for India has been done by the top three. So you're worried how Kedar Jadhav is going to bat coming back without even getting a warm-up game. So with every wicket falling, you worry that the tail is going to get exposed. So that way you have jitters. Otherwise, it's still a very comfortable chase.
Let me bring in Sriram in here. Sriram, I know this is something that you would have loved watching. Talk us a bit about what you thought of Bumrah's opening spell. I mean, making his World Cup debut. Of course, we know what he's capable of, but the accuracy and the consistency with which he was beating the edge and getting the edge was quite something, right?
Oh, it was unbelievable. I mean, there was enough hype, right? And not just hype. I mean, we'd seen enough of him and there was a lot of expectation. And the first over itself, I mean, he was unbelievable. You look at it, six balls, every ball was whizzing past. And I think that was when you realized, I mean, the pitch had a little bit more in it and it was really flying. The ball was really flying. You could almost see it in de Kock's eyes. A few of the deliveries after the ball had gone by and Bumrah is standing in the middle of the pitch with this kind of a nice little smile on his face. I mean, de Kock sort of blinking his eyes and looking like, whoa, what was that? So, I mean, he was on the money right from the first ball. And you could see it. I mean, like, he was relishing it. I mean, like, the fact that he was bowling to a left-hander. Surprisingly, the right-hander gave him the first wicket. But the key thing was Bhuvi at the other end, I thought was really impressive today because he didn't let anything sort of slip for a second. He was bowling at a good pace. He was steady at like 140 today. I don't think South Africans were ready for the nature of the pitch. Actually, I mean, even though the pitch reports and everything, we looked at it, it was still quite a bit of a surprise, the way the ball was flying off. De Kock going for the shot was set up because of what had preceded.
I want to add something to Sriram said. This is, I'm going to paraphrase Bumrah, where he said, during the innings break about how quickly he realized what the pitch had to offer. And he realized what length to bowl. And he said, I had to bowl test match length here, hard lengths, let the pitch give you the variations and batsmen try to take any risks when the ball was new and hard and he was getting seam movement. So, you know, that tells you, and I mean, I'm sure it's kind of obvious, it's been spoken about already, his acumen, cricket acumen, that he quickly summed up the conditions and realized what lengths to bowl. I mean, which is one of Wasim Akram's greatest strengths, that he would sum up, whether he's bowling in this old people athletics in New York and Houston and Los Angeles, or he was bowling in World Cup final, he summed up the conditions in the first over of what to do. Sure, Bumrah is like blessed with natural skills, physical abilities, but to sum up what length to bowl, what angles to bowl so fast, it's phenomenal. I mean, as Kohli said, he's operating on a different level, different planet. He's in a different planet right now as a fast bowler.
And one of the things that helped him also was the field he was given, right? I mean, that de Kock dismissal was a classic case of that third slip going in and the ball just flying straight to him after that. And
I mean, you're bowling test match lengths, then you better have test match fields.
It was awesome to watch. Just the aerial shot from the spider cab. just to look at the field there going, wow. We're watching an ODI here.
Oh, and there is another point to be noted here, which is not only in the first 10 overs, once they, you know, obviously Bumrah is your trump card. You want to make early breakthrough with the new ball and your ace in the hole, right? And once you make those breakthroughs, how you handle the next 30 overs, and which predominantly is going to be spin, right? With Chahal, Kuldeep in this case, and maybe Jadeja and the right-hand filth of Kedar Jadhav at some point, right? And Kohli tried to keep an attacking field. You know, he had the catches. So, which seems to be the case. Kind of, I think these are like learning opportunities for practice opportunities for Kohli to keep attacking fields, so that when he actually comes up against a dominant side like England or Australia, that he's still in that mode of chasing wickets, which I thought was a good indication for how India plan on attacking this tournament.
It's almost, we've been talking about England going at one-dayers like they would go at T20s, right? And so it's the obverse of that. India going at one-dayers like they were initially, at least, like they would with tests. And it's an interesting dynamic that both teams now bring to this World Cup.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess there are conditions, if they're suited, that are going to assist, then you go that way. You know, like if there are conditions that assist the bowlers, so which brings bowlers into prominence, like it is in a test match, then the one-day match leans towards that. Whereas if it's a flat track where batting holds sway, then you lean towards the T20 side. So the conditions play a big role on which way the ODI is going to lean, which approach you're going to take, whether a test approach or a T20 approach.
Just one last thing about the pitch. Just before the game, right, we were blasted with statistics about how this was the second highest scoring ground. And just after Trent Bridge, I mean, what was it, just 10 days ago, England made like 380 or something.
375, yeah.
Yeah, and Pakistan came close, correct? And were you just as surprised to see how the pitch acted? Because
let me ask you a question. On the same wicket, right? If it, instead of Bumrah or Bhuvneshwar Kumar, let's say it was Vinay Kumar. No, I'm serious. I'm not trying to be funny.
No, I know what you mean.
Then like, South Africa would have been all out for 127.
Oh, apdi vara. Oh. No, like, I mean, there is some assistance, you know. Rabada also got. So, Rabada and Bumrah got the most out of the wicket. And Chris Morris, unlike the Chris Morris that we saw in the tournament that shall remain unnamed because Sriram is here, where, you know, like two balls down the leg was guaranteed every six balls he bowled. Whereas here, he held a line. I mean, phenomenal. He bowled really, really well. His control was fantastic. But Rabada got the most out of the wicket. And Bumrah got the most out of the wicket. And these two are your best pace bowlers across all formats in cricket right now. But so if you give us some random person, like Vinay Kumar, would they have gotten anything out of the wicket?
No, fair enough.
My point in saying that is, like, the match that England and Pakistan played, Pakistan did not have the same attack they have right now. And this pitch is obviously prepared by ICC rather than ECB. So there are few things that mitigate the scoring here, but still, you know, you have to do something to get something off the wicket. And I think Karthikeya mentioned, you know, you need bowlers that do something with the ball, whether you bowl really fast, hard lengths, or you can really tweak the ball.
I mean, the quality point is absolutely spot on, because, you know, the way the Indian spinners bowled, I think they, with the drift and the dip that you spoke about, they pretty much took that pitch out of the equation. I mean, they were revving it, they were giving it, they were bowling aggressively, and they were playing against a team, I guess, who they had tremendous confidence against, because in 2018, India went to South Africa, the Indian spinners had their batsmen in knots, and it wasn't too different today, was it?
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
It was fantastic. Chahal, especially. I mean, it's almost like he came out of a gate charging. I mean, he was raring to go. Even that wicket of, was it Wander Dusen? You could see, I mean, when you looked at the replay later, the amount of drift for it to land where it landed, and like, even though he had telegraphed it enough that he probably had enough of a chance to even adjust to it, Chael.
Yeah, but, even if he had got into position to play that reverse sweep, I think he would have had a big problem against that ball, because it was drifting quite a bit outside. Yeah.
Oh, it was insane. I mean, you could tell when it happened. But later on, you're looking at the replay going, wow, look at where he released it and where it landed. And like literally went around his buttocks, right? I mean, like in Bolden. Mm-hmm. So it was quite a ball. I mean, like both of them were superb. Kuldeep too. I mean, you got to give it to him. As Subhash said, he was getting so much dip. I think it was Dumini. There was one ball he went out to sweep and realize the ball was nowhere near him. He was like completely fooled into these ridiculous defensive strokes. Somehow he got lucky and managed to keep it out. But they were both fantastic. To see wrist spinners bowl like that in a match like this, that was ultra special.
I mean, we had, what, four wrist spinners, two left-arm wrist spinners and two right-arm wrist spinners, which is, I don't know what the stat is for an ODI. What's the last time four wrist spinners played in a World Cup game?
That too involving South Africa, for God's
sake. Yeah, I don't know. When was the last time South Africa played like that?
Well, I don't know that stat, but Tim Wigmore had posted that there were only two regular wrist spinners in the 2015 World Cup. And now you have four in one game in 2019.
Wow. And on top of that, you still have Adam Zampa, you have Shadab Khan, Rashid Khan. Who else? Any other? Van der Stey? Would you be considered?
Jeevan Mendes, right?
Jeevan Mendes. Okay. So, it looks like with the scoring rates going up, I guess the middle over is 30 being critical, meaning you need to take wickets. You're not going to be able to contain batsmen. That means you need wicket-taking bowlers. Okay, if you don't have express pacers and the ball is soft, well, you need spinners. Well, finger spinners or wrist spinners? Wrist spinners are better because they can turn the ball on any kind of wicket. So I guess that's the resurgence of wrist spinners in ODI cricket now.
But what surprises me is that despite the glut of leg spinners, I think we missed Ish Sodhi. Did you mention Ish Sodhi?
He's no, I did not. Well. I did not. Yeah.
So despite the glut of leg spinners, there are still so many batsmen who are, including Indian batsmen, I should add, who are who have these phases when they struggle against leg spin. Is it just because they are taking time to get used to it, or is it they're not used to using their feet? What would you attribute that reason to?
All these spinners also, they are not the same style of spinners. They have different delivery points, delivery motions, tall, short, all kinds of varieties. So it's not like, they're all coming off the factory line. So I'm sure it takes a little bit of getting used to. But also, there is pressure to score more, faster. Sure, then some of them, South Africa, it seems, they have major trouble picking the spinners from the hand. In this case, we saw that they are not reading the length properly because they are giving themselves a lot less time to react to the ball, so they're picking off the pitch. But even then, the modern game, the way they're playing, the scoring rates are so much that even if they're picking, you have to attack the ball. And it's very dangerous to attack a competent leg spinner. However, with South Africa also having two wrist spinners in their side, with Tabrez Shamsi and CSK's very own Imran Tahir. Hey, Sri, just for you. they were not that effective. In fact, whenever Faf brought on the pacers to get some breakthrough, and the batsmen that were batting, sure, Rahul got out, but they were pretty sure of what they were going to do, where they were going to get the runs. They knew they can easily attack the spinners anytime. Dhoni and Rohit Sharma, they were pretty cool, chill, They could play out a maiden of Morris. They could take a few runs of here and there of Pelicquayo and Rabada, but they didn't really have to go after those bowlers because they knew they are going to get Tahir and Shamsi. And, you know, those two guys, you know, Tahir went for nearly 6 runs and over, and Shamsi went exactly 6 runs and over, which is 1.5 runs more than what was required.
You know, one could also attribute that to context, though. I mean, had South Africa made a higher score, and India were under run rate pressure, then maybe the effectiveness would have been different.
Would have been felt. So maybe then our guess that, you know, the rates at which people are expected to score has a bigger impact on how people face spinner. So maybe India were playing batting first, and let's say they didn't know what target to get. They didn't sum up the condition quickly enough. Then it's possible that Shamsi and Tahir may have looked different.
Oh, possible. And which brings me to the point of, you know, the Indian batting against spin. I mean, it was so different from the South African batting against spin, A, because, of course, they knew the target. They knew that if they just bat through 50 overs, they're going to mostly win this game. And Rohit Sharma, I mean, always a delight against spin, right? Totally. I mean, his footwork, his reading of spinners, the angles, and that, you know, he just seems to figure it out. And on days when it clicks, he's just not stoppable. I mean, even the that sixy hit of Shamsi, that was beautifully, just gorgeous. Came down the track, and there was like a beautiful swing there as well.
He was, I mean, we've always known this, and his footwork is just unbelievable, unbelievable. And it was almost like he was in like a Zen kind of zone, playing them so peacefully. It's night and day compared to what we were watching when Chahal and Kuldeep were bowling, and whatever Jadhav was bowling. And but Rohit was completely, I mean, his footwork has always been like just a joy to watch. And today, I mean, he was in a complete zero stress, walk in the park kind of state of mind, just putting on like a simple, uncomplicated clinic in how to just play Tahir and Shamsi.
There are three shots of Rohit Sharma that stand out for me. One, a very, very delicate late cut. Went for a four. I mean, it was beautiful. He waited. Balance was perfect. This stroke was great. Played it late. Another one was a pull of Rabada. I mean, it was 89 miles an hour delivery, and it was deposited, you know, over between fine leg and square leg, over the fielder's head. Beautiful, and it was the longest boundary there. I think 91 meter boundary. And another one was a sweep towards the end of the innings. He swept a delivery of Imran Tahir. His front foot was so far down the wicket, and he got so low and hit the ball on its head, kept it down, 4 runs. I mean, those three shots, you know, those are the things that keep coming back to me in my head of the inning when I think about Rohit Sharma's innings. He's got this ability, you know, like a Roger Federer, where they look, batting look, you know, where they, whatever they are doing on the field looks so easy that you think you should be able to do it.
Yeah, it's also the late manner in which he plays, right? It's like he reads it early and then plays it late, which gives him all that extra milliseconds to sort of adjust himself and almost make it look so easy compared to any rushed movement. And there's that, you know, people were, a few people were posting saying that not his most fluent 100 and all that, but I thought he was, for large phases of it, he was extremely fluent.
I mean, fluency-wise, you know, in relation to his other ODI hundreds, sure, because it doesn't have the same scoring rate. It's his slowest ODI 100 of the 23 he has. This is the slowest. So if you say that's what fluency is, his scoring rate is fluency, then sure, you're correct. But however, the quality of the strokes he played, considering the pitch had something to offer, and he was up against one of the greatest fast bowlers the game has ever seen, Rabada. And, you know, he could have been out earlier. You know, he had a pull that went off his arm or hand, you know, early on in his innings. So he had to respect that. And Morris had one of the Morris spells. So he had to play, well, he was 50. When he got to 50, he was of 70, 78 balls, something like that. You know, so he had to take it easy. And he knew he had the time to do it. So
There was no pressure from the score. I totally agree. And after the, I mean, Rabada was bowling, brilliantly, of course. And he had two, right? One of them, which Duplessis almost got to, the one he tried to hook. And the other one was one which dropped behind Dumini's head. I mean, so the pressure from the score wasn't there. And once he could weather those overs, I mean, what was the need to go at a blistering pace?
And, and the thing with Rohit is, I mean, we're talking about Bumrah, about how he seems to assess the conditions so quickly and bowl. I think Rohit comes across as a batsman like that. He's been like that for so long. I mean, if it's he takes that little bit of time, but when he knows that it's a belter, then he sort of makes sure he accelerates enough to compensate for that slow start. And if he sees a pitch that's not as great for batting as today, then he sort of goes at a certain rate. So I think his scoring rate is a very, very judicious choice that he makes. And I think I would admire him for it rather than saying that, you know, try and compare the between other innings.
And he also knows that doesn't matter, you know, if required, he can always up the scoring rate because the last time somebody, India had somebody that had this, you know, they can hit sixes at will. Was Sourav Ganguly really against spinners? Sourav Ganguly against spinners was a treat to watch. He can hit six anytime he wanted. But with Rohit Sharma, he can hit six of anybody. You know, so he knows. He can go at 70 runs for every 100 balls, and by the time the innings ends, he's like, 120, no problem. So he's a phenomenal batsman.
Today's context, really. Well, I mean, he just played what he had to. There was no need for any theatrics.
Correct.
There was no need for any sort of rush of blood acceleration or anything. I mean, like he was, you could see it in his face. Yeah, just hang around and just play a game and it's going to come. So
I don't know what you see in his face, Sriram. I just see the same thing in his face every time. It's like, okay, whatever.
That is true. That is true. Even when he's fishing and missing every ball, I mean, you still see the same thing.
Because this is like a quintessential Virat Kohli century. Virat Kohli on a smaller chase total, like comes in, does a work, 9 to 5, 100. That's what it is. 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Comes to work, puts 100, goes home. You know, that's what this Rohit Sharma century was. Perfect.
Yeah, so let's, I guess, yeah.
There is one thing, we need to talk about Kedar Jadhav. what is it?
You mean, what does he bowl?
Okay, if you want to call that bowling, yes. Yeah. What is it? I mean, it's like, because he bowls the same delivery, but different arm slots, that's about it. Right? I don't know how he gets the change of pace.
See, I think we had four wrist spinners and we had an armpit spinner.
people find it hard to get him away. I don't get it. I do not get it.
Well, one of the tenets that a spinner is often taught at the junior level is that he has to put the ball above the eye line of the batsman and then bring it down, right? So that's where you get the dip and the and you confuse the batsman. Kedar Jadhav basically starts from the hip of the batsman and then he's going above the hip and below the hip, I think. So he's somewhere there.
I mean, it's total filth. Absolute filth. But somehow it works. And he got four overs in for almost nothing for a sixth bowler that really does not bowling four overs at a team and going for only 16 runs is huge
for the kind of bowling that Kedar comes up with. It's been amazing that I have never, maybe my memory is bad, but I have never seen any batsman or any couple of batsmen shred him to bits. I've never seen Kedar Jadhav go for like 30 runs in two overs. It's I may be wrong. I may be missing something, but he always seems to put in these overs and then quickly he'll finish three or four and then he'll say, okay, goodbye.
Talking of CSK, I want to make one last reference and to an ex-CSK player and current RCB coach, Nehraji. Bumrah's spell today, 2 for 35 in 10, most economical since Nehraji against Pakistan in the 2011 World Cup. 2 for 33 then. So, you know.
Well, so you're saying he's in great company.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Nehraji, yeah. You're in company with Nehraji, you have done it. You have
But Bumrah still has to eat a banana when he's when he's on the field to compare with the great Nehraji. Okay. Don't even mention them in the same breath.
You have to throw up on the pitch too.
Yeah. You have to just give your gut for the team. That's what you have to do. All right. So this was fun.
Okay. All right. See you.
Okay, man. Thanks, Sriram. Thanks.
Oh, nothing. Pleasure, man. We'll talk soon sometime.
Okay.
All right.
That brings us to the end of another episode of the 81 All Out podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever else you prefer. It would be wonderful if you could leave a rating and review so that more people can find us. You can also follow us on Twitter at 81 All Out and check out our previous podcasts and articles on our website, 81allout.com. We love to hear back from you, so please send us your feedback. Thanks for listening.
Series. They're going to get back for two. India at home.